So I've been listening to a lot of yogis, and I was listening to the LDLs the other day, and sort of like all this hubbub about these ox herding stories, and like it's so complicated, so difficult. I kept thinking of trying to channel Norman Fisher, who used to come to us all the time, and I'm like, what are we doing? What are we doing? So, in keeping with my love for video, I said, why don't I go and find a video that explained this from a Zen person? Like, I had the Zen people tell us what it is that we're supposed to be looking at over the course of the year. Cannot believe it took me a whole month to figure this out, but I found a video that I think explains it. And I feel, I think I've told you guys this already, but you may not remember, but Norman Fisher used to come, and he's a Zen master, and he would tell these jokes. And then he would tell the joke, and there'd be silence. We'd all sit there, nothing. And then he would tell us the punchline. And then everybody would start laughing because it was so funny. But he's like, Tara Buttons, you got to explain the whole thing for us to get it. Zen is a little bit more tucked in, you got to kind of figure it out thing, right? It's a little different. And I realized when I saw this video, which is why I want to play it, we had made this way more complicated than it actually is. And when I saw this video, it just landed. And I'm like, oh, I understand what we're doing here, what we're embarking on over the course of this year. And I also understand how, as practitioners in the Theravada tradition, just the nature of the way we practice, we can get things like Zen practices a little entangled. So hopefully this video will, I'll tie it into what Dane said in his meditation after you see the video, but I think it'll help us settle more into understanding what it is we're trying to embark upon. And also why it's a little bit more convoluted than some of our other things that we've used as a teaching thing. So let me share my screen here. This is a little longer than normal. It's actually almost 6 minutes, but we have a little extra time. So again, Dane was perfect. Stopped a little early, got a little more time. It was all scripted. Okay, so you should be able to see my screen. And I'm gonna make this bigger. So this is put together from the temple in Korea. I think it's called Zen Wisdom that actually puts this together. What is this? Middle Way Wisdom. That's what it is. Okay. So I want to spend some time and tell you what I got out of that video, and then I want us to spend some time and see what you got out of the video. Think for me, the hearing of the ox as sort of as our true self versus the ox as awakening, first of all, that right there changed my understanding. Because actually, what I think there, yeah, I can. I think what we're pointing to is awakening is the coming into our true self. The way Dane's poem pointed to the leaf knowing its true self. If it knows its true self, it does not have a conflict with whatever is arising in the moment, because it is the joining of its true self with the reality of that moment. And the ox herding stories point to that join, that joining together. And that joining together is considered the awakened, the enlightened mind. That's why these stories have always pointed to awakening and enlightenment. But somehow, when I looked at this video and thinking of this as the joining or coming into knowing my true self, that resonated easier for me. And I think there's some reasons why we both have to prepare ourselves for taking on these pictures and not getting ourselves dropped into some kind of rabbit hole. And we have to sort of keep reminding ourselves what we're doing on the path, because it's different than the way we normally relate to the path. So when we normally teach a teaching year, the subject, what we usually do is pick a concept in Dhamma, and then we teach from that concept, how to understand it, how to practice with it, what do you think about it. The concept is there in front of us, and then we teach from that. This year is going to be a little different because there's no real concept, no Dhamma concept that we're teaching from, except for maybe I feel a little bit more comfortable with thinking of it as my true self, which is the way I'm going to refer to it from now on, is this coming in alignment with what's true, who I truly am. That alignment seems to make a little bit more sense to me than teaching like I could see where finding my true self in just a moment of conflict that I'm having an ordinary day, or trying to find my true self, the ultimate trying to find my true self so I can just be alive in myself. Those two things make sense to me, and that's what these stories are pointing to. So I feel more settled in that. But when I really knew that this was the video I'm showing everybody this week to sort of help us, is the end little paragraph about doing, it's like the, it helps us take the ordinary and doing ordinary in our doing our ordinary lives in extraordinary ways. That there's something about doing the tales bring the ordinary into our life, and we're going about our lives doing our ordinary lives, but there is this extraordinary way in which it unfolds. That's what we are practicing with this year, how to access that extraordinary in the ordinary by seeing more of our true self as we come in alignment with it. The reason why Tim and I put this whole month, you know, we could have just started the Oxherding Tales on January and then did some follow-up in the last 2 months. But the reason why we made this first month be about kind of like a spinning around in it before we actually get in it kind of month, to me, is exactly what happened to me. This, I've been spinning in this for a month now, thinking, how many more talks can I give on the overview about the stories without actually getting into the stories? And yet it took until January 2020 for me to actually find a video that made sense. So I've been sharing and reflecting on this for a month. I've taught the Monday nights, I've taught the Thursday nights, and then whatever time I've spent with Sunday, and yet it took me until the 20th to really begin to understand how is this different than what we normally do. because it is different than what we normally do. So one way to think about the difference between this is that normally when we, like I say, teach a concept and then we expand upon it, we all reflect upon it, then it's like we are bouncing off the concept and reflect and pointing our reflection on whatever that concept has been. That is not the ox herding stories. The ox herding stories is more like you practice with it and then you come back and tell me what's the concept we should be looking at here. It's a kind of an awkward thing, but instead of the LDLs and I and Tim teaching the concept to you and then you then practice with that concept, this is more of teaching the way to practice. You go practice and then you come back and say, this is what I've uncovered about practice. Here's the concept. As we all start talking about what we're uncovering, about what it means to search, or what does it mean to tame this ox? What does it mean to tame the relationship with the true self? I can't tell you what that means because I'm not the one in the struggle with this true self. You are in the struggle with your true self. So you have to actually pay attention to that struggle and then come back and say, when I struggled, this is what I saw. This is what I'm beginning to feel. And the concept will probably land on us at the end of the month rather than at the beginning. We will not start with the concept and then grow into greater understanding. We will start with the confusion and grow into this greater understanding of what it is we're talking about. This, to me, is the only way this kind of works. Because the last time we kind of approached this, SIMS as an organization, we did it with Rodney. And the difficulty was that Rodney was teaching the way Theravadins teach, which is, here's the concept you need to get, and now you go practice with that. But it may not work out that way. Whatever he was saying, it always felt a little off with me. But I'm beginning to see, when I saw that video, I'm like, oh, so I can't tell, say, if I use some names here, I can't tell Janelle or Susan, Julie, I can't tell you guys how to come into alignment with your true self. I can't look at Eva. I could tell Eva who I think her true self is, but I can't really say what it is. I can't go with Steve and say, you know, this is what you should do, Steve, because this is how you should work with the ox in this way, because I cannot know what is the representation of your true self. Only you know that. And you know it when you begin to look for it. That's how you figure it out. The little tracks in the path, you begin to see things, begin to understand things, you begin to notice, wait, I don't like it when I feel this way. But there's something about this way. I keep doing this, but I don't like it. And that I don't like it is you recognizing your true self. And you are used to leaning into the habit, and now you see your true self is not that habit. But how do you stop the habit? There's the conflict, the struggle that's going to start happening. How do I stop that habit and come more into myself? But just imagine the possibility if we were all working with our true self in this overall trajectory, this arc over the course of a year, and then beginning to come into relationship with them. We're not necessarily going to be enlightened by the end of the year, but there will be moments where we will be enlightened, because there will be moments when we will get all the way to that 10th circle and see our true self. Union, become one with our true self. And there will be times when we won't. But over the course of the year, we will begin to see, how do I find it? And by sharing that with each other, we strengthen each other's kind of link to that. I'm going to put the link in here as soon as we're in the breakout, or just before, because probably some people won't go to the breakout. So anyway, that's what I think we're embarking upon. So what I'm pointing to is that this year might be a little different in the way that we practice together. It may be that we need each of us to kind of share what we've seen so far, what we're looking at, more so than we normally do. So there's a kind of way in which as Sangha, we can share the unfolding of what we're seeing and actually help each other see more. That's what I think we are embarking upon. But I don't know how this video was for you, so I want to put us in breakout rooms and begin to see how people thought about the video. I'm gonna just get the link here and put it in the chat right quick. All right. Here's the link. And there's a lot of Zen teachers online that actually talk about these tales. And I would go to Zen teachers and actually, you know, I think these tales are the potential of understanding how the practice unfolds. And that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to, you know, I guess keep it new and different. And this is a way to practice in a different way. To that end, we have to think about it, but somebody, a yogi from the Thursday night group, I'm pretty sure this is what Thursday night's going to do. But they came up with this idea that at the end of every month, people would bring whatever artistic expression of this month's practice is to them. Maybe it's some song they heard, maybe it's some picture, maybe it's a drawing they made, a haiku, a poem, whatever, something that represents to them. It could be something in nature, that some gnarly little thing they find, and this is conflict, you know, and whatever. But that we bring it kind of like at the end of the month and share the artistic expression of how we've been living in this particular picture. Because the pictures and the poems are so artistic that our own artistic expression might be a great way to begin to understand it. So instead of having breakout rooms, we all just kind of share what we worked with over the course of the month, what we saw. And this is how this month is represented to me. And I think we will begin to, you know, flower into an understanding from all these various expressions of what searching for the ox represents to each of us, that our wisdom and understanding will grow. So this is a adventure. I think someone said that from the last time, it's an adventure. We don't quite know how it's going to turn out. We do have some Zen teachers we can rely on for some clarity. But really, this is you practicing with finding your inner self and what that looks like. And whatever it looks like in any of our lives is going to be important to the rest of us. Whatever it looks like, that's what's important, is that we share that. Sorry about that, everybody. I was, I don't know if you got the notice that you had 3 minutes, but I was supposed to hit send broadcast. I hit close the room instead. So I'm really sorry. We kind of, if anybody was in their mid-sentence, they wanted to share something, they can share it out loud. But I'm hoping you'll share what, I want to see how the video landed for people. If this helped in any way, or if it's just me. So maybe a few of you could share how your experience was. Or yeah, go ahead, Charlotte.
Well, I shared in the group that the first book I ever read was Jack Kornfield's The Path with Heart. And in it, he says, take the one seat. And I feel like this is a quite a departure from the one seat. And to see the oxen and people dressed in 12th century garb, it's a little off-putting for me, but I am willing to open my mind as I can and see what I can gain from it.
What's the take the one seat mean? What does that mean?
Well, for me, it meant taking the turban seat. And it's the seat I've taken for as long as I've meditated. Oh, and I have resisted the Zen and Tibetan. I don't read anything in their lineage. And so that's
where I'm at. I see.
You know,
yes.
And I can be a pretty serious person, and having none is something to challenge. So here we go.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think you're going to end up making this part of your one seat anyway. I don't think you're going to, this is definitely not going to, we're not going to even practice it the Zen way. We're going to practice it the Theravadin way of looking at something Zen. So yeah, we've already made that mess up. That we've already messed up in that way. So hopefully, I hope over the course of the year you'll say, yeah, you know, I had some reservations, but it really did help me see into a little bit more how I can feel a little bit more spaciousness and freedom in any given moment. So, good. Yeah, Sean or Bruce?
Yeah, hi, everyone.
Hi, Sean.
Hi, Tawari. I love the video. I loved everything about the video. I loved the art. I loved the words and how they disappeared. They were there and then they left. I loved how the story was told. I loved how I felt when I was watching it. I just felt so relaxed.
And they have that little way that they do make things alive that are not alive.
Yeah.
You know, I love that.
And it faded from one picture to the next. I mean, it was such a flow. It was just this, and I felt like I was just flowing towards enlightenment. And then it made like enlightenment, which I just feel like sometimes we make such a big deal out of it, made it like just really simple and ordinary.
Yeah.
You know, if you can just put all of the stuff that hindrances or whatever Buddhist word we want to put in this crap inside of us aside and see, just be with. And that's kind of how I felt. So I'm excited because I think Vipassana attracts a certain kind of mindset, and it's been a lot of my mindset. And this is sort of a different mindset, and I think it'll be good for me to go there to this more relaxed.
Yeah.
And I found that I couldn't read the words fast enough and I was getting stressed out.
Yes.
So what I did halfway through was said, I'm not going to look at the words, which said to me, you can't figure this out with your mind.
Yeah, you can't.
You just have to let it come from inside.
That's right.
So that's what I got out of it.
Right.
And it was much better when I stopped trying to read the words.
Yes. And that's actually what the whole transcendence is. You know, that's what we're practicing in some given moment. Can we just let go of the struggle with it and actually just be with it as it's arising.
Yeah.
Great. Amy? Hi.
Hi, Sabrina. I also appreciated the video. The part that really struck me, really resonated, was the stanza, I guess, on taming the ox. And to me, it's just so, like, I know that feeling because I feel like my practice sort of been in that place for a while. And I liked really the imagery and the words that were used. It felt like it sort of hit that feeling of the chaos of being pulled in my mind or my ego, sort of desires, aversions, and maybe being a bit confused. And it's nice to have be like, okay, yeah, and then there's a process to move through that. I feel like I was tracking it partly because I'm also reading Dancing with Life, Philip Moffat's book right now. And it feels like it's describing the same sort of pathway.
It is.
Yeah, right. And I also am struggling with the same part. And it's nice with Philip's book because, you know, it's a book. I can read it, put it down, come back and be like, I still am struggling with this. But it's, yeah, where I'm at with that is the letting go of clinging. And then, like, moving from, like, it being sort of an intellectual to experiencing letting go of clinging.
Yep. I think that's where we all are, Amy. And I so appreciate what you're saying because that this year, I hope we have this be less conceptual and more practice. It'll be different. It's not like how we normally do things. You just come and kind of like listen and maybe you share, maybe you don't, but this is, I think this year is going to be more. Dane was asking me, did I think people are going to talk more? And I said, that's what I think is going to happen. I think ultimately we're going to begin to see that it's less us telling you how this is and you telling us how you're experiencing, because the thing itself is relatively simple to see, but the real of it is, say, what Bruce said, when you're struggling trying to read the words and I'm having all this conflict, is there a way for me just to accept it and let that go? Yeah. Same with you, this kind of noticing the struggle. You can see that struggle in your own practice, and that in and of itself is wisdom. Great. Carlito?
Hey there. So yeah, in our group, we were kind of contrasting, or maybe it was me, contrasting Zen and you know, our tradition. And that the true self is kind of like, you know, a word that wasn't really used much. And then someone in the group brought up non-self, and you know, which is a word that is used a lot. And then it's like, so true self versus non-self, what's going on there? And then it's like, oh, it's like that seventh or eighth ox herding picture where there is no ox. And it's like, I mean, like the traditions have merged there or something, you know, and I thought that was kind of a cool insight that.
Yes, I do too.
Yeah. That non-self and true self aren't mutually exclusive or anything like that. It's just,
correct.
Yeah.
And I do too.
And I'm just excited to kind of delve into Zen a little bit. I mean, I actually did a little Zen before I discovered Sims. So.
We're not going to delve into Zen because we don't know Zen.
We're no, just a little bit.
Use a Zen thing and we're going to make it all terabyte and then all jumbled up and, you know, it's going to be all that. Like the Zen people are going to be like, what the hell is all of that? Because that's not what we're doing.
It's going to be Zenovon.
You messed up Zen. So it's not. We're taking a Zen thing and we're bringing it into our traditional way of practicing and just using that as the focus. to talk about how we practice. And I think that's exactly what you explained with this thing. And we don't use true self. We use non-self, and that non-self, true self, it merges. And I can understand, you know, am I too selfing in this moment versus am I, you know, letting go and just being with the moment as it is. I can understand that. And so that's going to help us be, but it just in what we have said just so far, just a very small amount that we've said just so far, you can see the wisdom of understanding what's going on, because you're actually sharing your direct experience of how this is landing for you. And then over the course of all of us kind of saying how it's landing, this understanding begins to rise out of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah, it's either Kathy or Cheryl. Hi, Cheryl.
Well, thank you, Carlito, for that non-self versus true self, because that's a confusing concept for me. One thing that you said to where you combine true self with whatever is arising, and then, you know, act from that place. That feels like, well, first of all, I saw myself in picture 4, exactly where I am right now. And I also, something else you said earlier was that these are momentary things. It's not like a lifetime, like I'm going to get to somewhere and be there forever. So the combining true self with whatever is arising, when I'm not combining my true self with whatever is arising, I'm believing stuff that isn't true. I'm believing, you know, a mind that is telling me, you know, it's delusion. But, you know, somebody pointed out to me. Yeah, I'm believing what's not true. And
yeah,
that's it. That's all I really want to say.
That's it. And so that process is going to happen over and over and over and over again. So almost like what Amy was saying, this is where I see I'm stuck right here, right here, right here. But I think I saw a bird that was flying that, you know, had a little toke of something. Probably had a little bit too much of that. They were like doing something that was looking like they were struggling trying to keep their balance. Oh my God, I've never seen anything like that. Okay, just got to give myself for a minute. Whew. So the main thing I don't want us to do is to judge what we see, right? So there's a, oh, I see where I'm at here, because within the context of where you're at, like if you say, I see I'm at 4, 5 is right there too, and 3 is right there, and 10 is coming, and 2 is right there behind you. You know, sort of like it's all kind of interwoven within. So hopefully what we'll begin to learn is to, what are the conditions that I need to cultivate to get me to 5? What are the conditions that have to exist for me to get stuck in 3? Do you see what I'm pointing to? So you begin to listen, and we hear, and we all are trusting in our own experience, our direct experience, and yet we're learning from each other certain things that will begin to come through a lot. You'll begin to see certain things exist when you're in picture 1, and certain things exist when you're in picture, say, 7. Great. Lillian or Nikhil?
Yeah, so something that kind of came up in our group was, how long have we been searching for fulfillment? And for me, you know, it's interesting because when I was a kid, I was doing the things that made me fulfilled. You know, I would sit around and play video games for hours on end, or like watch TV, or, you know, do whatever. And those were the things I wanted to be doing. And I was fulfilled, but I didn't think of it in those concepts, or, you know, realize that. And as I've gotten older, you know, you keep doing those things out of habit, kind of like you were saying before, but they started to cause anxiety. And I started to realize, oh, there's like a lack of fulfillment. And there's this slow process of trying to get back almost to where you unconsciously were when you were younger.
Yes.
And it's interesting. And someone in our group mentioned that, you know, those 10 stories, they aren't necessarily linear. You can start at 10 and then be at 1, then be at 4. And I thought that was an interesting, observation too.
Yeah. Yeah. So yes, this is it. This is that, you know, kind of sensing into that. Conceptually, we can think that, right? Like, I see that I'm trying to fulfill. It doesn't work like it did when I was a kid. But as we begin to practice with feeling that lack of fulfillment or the wanting fulfillment and it's not working, as we begin to feel that over the course of the month, now the direct experience is going to teach us something completely different. It makes the experience of the first noble truth that there is suffering come alive. Like, so sort of like when Joseph, one time he had been practicing and teaching for like 40 years. And then one day he goes, he was practicing around fear. And he was like, it is fear. He has this issue with fear and he's always afraid. He started getting in this issue with fear. And then all of a sudden he goes, there is suffering. You know, it was like, it's like, there is suffering. And that's what he said. He walked around saying, there is suffering. There is suffering. It's like that. It's like all of a sudden, this direct experience has this bell go off. And the whole thing begins to take on a whole new level. And coming to a Sangha, I think no matter what we talk about in any year, it is designed to poke at us, to get us to open up and see a little bit more of that direct experience of what's going on, of the nature of what Buddha was talking about. So everything we're doing, the Sangha itself is supposed to push us in that direction. And so that's what I hope we do. We push ourselves in a direction where we begin to see more clearly. Suze, I'm sorry. You can share and then I'll give it back to Dane. I'm kind of lost here.
It just occurred to me that I'm excited about the way you describe how we're going to be practicing with this. So where we're going to be doing our practice, bringing back the concepts, the issues that have come up, and then deal with them. And it just occurred to me that there's this weird gift that we've been given from 2 years of the pandemic of doing all of this online. And I was looking at this, the pictures of everybody, and I was thinking, and I said when we first joined, this is so cozy. I know everybody here. You know, and I feel like there's enough trust in our Sangha that we've been sharing in our little groups our vulnerabilities and our, it's like Charlotte, bless you for saying, you know, I don't know about this, you know, and I just think it's such a beautiful opportunity for Sangha building. I mean, I know it's a different thing than what we talk about, but I got pretty excited about Sangha building when we were doing the fundraising campaign because people are just saying, yeah, Sims, the teachings, you know, I love it. And I think that's what this can be. It's a different looking at it, but I think we've built up the trust. We have that ground that we can do this together. I'm excited about that part of it.
Yeah, me too. I think it'll start out awkward. Just like when we started talking about Dhamma in everyday life and I had to do wealth and then electronics. And I was like, okay, there's some Dhamma in there. But by the time we got to the end of that year, you look back on it and you're like, that was the best year ever. We say that about every year. Every year, you know, even when we did the dependent origination, we were like, this is going to be boring. How long, how many talks can you give on feeling tones? But by the end of the year, it was fantastic. It was sort of like, let's do that year again. So that's what I think it will be kind of awkward feeling our way through. But I think we have some ideas we talked about, a way to approach this that's really going to make this quite an enjoyable year.